Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. I'm your host this week, David J. Lohr, and with me, as always, and in a ridiculously long streak, the chief TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman.
How you doing over there?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm recovering from the New Year's holiday. How about you?
I'm recovering from that kind of, but mostly trying to recover from a cold. Doing moderate job of that, but you know, nothing stops the TVTM freight train.
Oh, that's right. I was telling the kids today I'm gonna have to do a TVTM, and they misheard it as TV Tim. So you have a new nickname.
that was an old show. There was a TV Tim phase. You know, I was younger.
You know. So, it's a new year and. Whole bunch of new shows coming up soon, I think.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
tons of them, David. Tons of them.
I've seen one or two, and you've seen a heck of a lot more. Any preference where to start?
Let's start with we should probably start with Emerald City, because that is on tonight, Friday, when we do our international rollout. I believe we're doing our international rollout.
assuming someone can post it, yes.
That's
the idea.
And if not, guess what? You haven't missed that much. That's the beauty of starting with Emerald City.
Oh.
So that's the view. You know, look, I am not fundamentally opposed to classics being changed. And I'm not even a huge, like, I live and die by Wizard of Oz, but me, and that one's been done billions of times over. Right. So surprise, it's been done again. So Emerald City is a 10-hour remake, it's not even really a remake so much as it is a quote unquote reimagining. And it's a little interesting.
I love any description that starts off, and
she kind of comes out of, it's modern day at the beginning, right? Dorothy kind of comes out of Kansas and ends up in Westeros. Which is the unexpected side effect of, I was like, oh, is this like a Game of Thrones version of Emerald City? I'm all over the, oh, it's on NBC, so there'll be no nudity. But there's tons of violence, and there's all kinds of different vibes on there. You know, they're really all over the map. I will say this. I normally, if it's something that I really don't like, I normally check out rather quickly, and as long as I get a sense of it, and I want to see if they're moving in what direction to sort of solidify the exclamation point or not. And in this one, I kept watching, not exactly, David, because I was like, oh, more. Yes. It was like, what? Okay, wait, what?
Yeah.
I'll try another one. And then I got through like five of them, I think. And that's half the season. So, four or five. And, they get a little more silly as it goes. I'm a little surprised that they tried to balance a little bit of silliness, because they're trying creative ways to introduce you to characters we know and love. And a little things like Toto is a canine. You know, he's a canine police dog. And little other ways that they don't want you to spoil how the other characters are revealed, and some of them are you see coming, other ones are a little bit more creative, and then other ones are like, oh, you did that. But it's kind of surprisingly violent, and you know, there's Vincent D'Onofrio is the wizard, and I could not for the life of me, and this is probably a bad sign, I could not for the life of me figure out whether he was playing it as like funny and because he in odd, or was he supposed to be menacing? Because he was not menacing. He's normally a very menacing person.
Yeah.
He has a really weird speaking tone in this, and you know, it's kind of a all over the map. This thing, so you have accents from all over the world blending together. But I think the thing that struck me is that, like, okay, it's different. I'm up for that. Not my favorite thing. I probably, you know, there's too much out there for me to really want to watch the whole 10 hours. But all 10 hours are shot. They're not going to cancel it. You can get through it. I was just sort of surprised that it was so violent for network television, and pretty dark in its own way. And I would say that Dorothy, I'm going to mispronounce her name. The actress is Adria Arjona, and I think she had a very small role on True Detective, and she's not super well known. She appears to be playing in a police procedural, and other people are in like a big costume drama, you know, and some people are in like a dark cable drama. And then Jolie Richardson, who is Glinda, is she's in an entirely hardly different franchise.
Oh, I don't, it's
kind of a hodgepodge, so that's a short way of putting it. It's a hodgepodge. If you're into hodgepodges, David, go for
then,
it.
Then this is the show. Yeah. Oh my! I seem to recall months and months, even maybe years ago, they announced NBC is going to do Emerald City, but that they were going to do it set in the present day in a hospital. And everything was going to track to the characters of The Wizard of Oz. And then that got scrapped and they were going to do something else. And, you know, I wonder how much of this is revamping the idea or trying to take bits and pieces from different concepts and trying to make them work. I don't know.
Yeah, it's I think part of its charm is that it's so offbeat. And then a good part of its undoing is that it's so offbeat. So I don't know. And I think I've said this before, I think networks do have to take chances and be kind of wildly out there, right, and take familiar franchises, which we have one here, and, you know, reinvigorate them or make them be loud. They have to be heard on networks because there's so much other stuff, you know, people right. are out there talking about shows I haven't even watched yet, like The Young Pope and all that kind of stuff. So,
well, admittedly, I'm talking about it just because I like making jokes about a show called The Young Pope. I'm not really.
Right.
what I've seen of it looks utterly awful.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that as a good Catholic boy.
Right.
and I'm all for a good papal thriller, or, you know, I'm not precious about the Pope, but this just looks ridiculous.
Yeah, that one, I'm going to get to it. There are a couple out there, and I'm working on, since I'm not at TCA, yes, I'm not. You're talking to me live in my remote Northern California.
The compound.
Home office, yeah. But since I'm not there, one of the things I do want to talk about, which would be TV-related kind of stuff that I do down there. And with all the executives skipping, it really kind of wasn't worth it. And there were other decisions made or other elements made on the decision not to go. But I just wonder, particularly this column I'm working on, is like how Netflix kind of stands out. And they seem to be releasing so many things that even people who are sort of paid to do it are like, what is that now? And when I talk to normal people, they're like, oh, I'm hearing there's some buzz for this Stranger Things. And I'm like, was that like 3 years ago? You know, it seems like that pace is quickening and people don't really know what's going on. But speaking of that, tonight is also another series that I was not moved to write. I didn't actually have to review it, so that's part of it. But you did watch, I believe, an episode of the revamp, Norman Lear's revamp of his own show, One Day at a Time.
I did. I watched a couple, which they were very easy to binge.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it is very much the traditional four-camera sitcom with a live audience. And if you're not paying attention, it will keep playing for you. Netflix is very good at automating that.
Mm-hmm.
And I whenever I get a new device, I have to go in and set the settings to say, don't do that. Don't do that again. But I didn't mind this time. This was, you know, I want to say they're not reinventing the wheel, even though they kind of are. But, you know, it's being done by very smart writers and writers who are experienced at four camera sitcom. So, you know, you're in good hands. The cast is remarkably good, or, you know, right off the bat. Mm-hmm. Great chemistry. And I mean, Rita Moreno, you know, I'm there. Mm-hmm. That's right. She's mm-hmm. she's a huge part of my childhood, thanks to the Electric Company. And then just seeing her in other things. And her first entrance, they don't do this in every episode, thank goodness. But the first time she enters is a wonderful moment where she sweeps aside two curtains. And the audience just goes, oh, my God, it's Rita Moreno. Yay. And, you know, it's the full-on Fonzie Kramer kind of entrance.
Sure. That's funny.
After that, it's just like, oh, now it's the show. So thank God. But, yeah, it's a nice reimagining of the concept, because it's not, you know, it's not the same family in Indianapolis. It's a Cuban family in Los Angeles. But it's a single mother, divorced, raising two children. There's a superintendent in their building named Schneider. And aside from that, it's its own thing. And it is quite good. So, mm-hmm. you know, and especially compared to Fuller House, since Netflix seems to be into this right now, that one is very slavishly exactly the same as the original show.
Right.
Whereas this is, you know, aside from taking the basic framework and it's the same theme song musically and lyrically, but it's done by Gloria Estefan and it is wonderful. This is shallow. That was one of the things I worried about, because that is an earworm from my childhood, right?
Right.
But it was really good. But yeah, the writing was just sharp enough because it's Netflix and they don't have to worry about commercials or running times so much. It lets them let the characters breathe. You know, you don't have that sort of abbreviated 19 minutes with 11 minutes of commercials. So it was kind of nice. It was nice to get to know these people and get to know the rhythms of this family, uh-huh. which you don't always get to do. And it is a slightly different rhythm than we're used to. But I really enjoyed it. I think I'll probably watch the rest of the 13 episode season.
Now, I come at that slightly different, in that I had no love lost for, I'm not sentimental about One Day at a Time. I barely remembered it. When I was a kid, I didn't watch much TV, which was odd. But I recall One Day at a Time. It's just like Fuller House, which I never saw. I have no overriding interest in watching the remake, other than literally my one reason to watch this, other than I'm a television critic and it would probably be helpful if I did watch it, even though it's being reviewed, I think, by Dan, it's fascinating to me that Norman Lear, who's all 94 years old, put a television show on the air. I mean, that, yeah. And I've seen him at press tour, and he's as sharp as my mom would say, as sharp as the tack. And of course, he outlived my mom by a good many years. So it's like, it's kind of amazing to see him in the flesh, because you almost don't like, why are you so sharp at like 93 or 4? Why are you mounting a new television? So what? You are a mutant. So a part of that is what's fascinating. But as far as the show, I probably, this is the downfall of that peak TV era, as we're talking about all the time. I don't imagine myself going back and watching this show, because I don't have the interest in it. So, I mean, I'll definitely want to see something, Young Pope. I want to see things that I've already missed. There's things on other channels that are, you know, because I follow other TV critics and TV fools, they're gurgling up with anticipation or derision about something. And I'm like, I'll check in on that, right. even though I've missed right. it. So there's other choices. I just won't do that one.
Yeah, I mean, I was curious, because it, that's exactly right. Norman Lear at 94 is putting a show on the air, and he is deeply involved in it. He's not, it's oh, not yeah. just like I'm slapping my name on it because I have a proprietary interest.
Yeah, he didn't Steven Spielberg this baby.
No.
He helped birth it. Yeah.
And I mean, we back when we were at the Austin TV Festival, he was there, and the developers of this version were there, Gloria Kellett and Mike Royce. And I, now I've known Mike Royce on Twitter for years, so I should say that. So yeah, that's part of why I was like, hey, let's see.
What oh, and Mike do. Is one of the greats. He's one of the really super nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And there were one or two lines where I'm going, I bet that's one of his, because it just had the ring of his style.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice. And, you know, being able to talk to them in Austin, you know, because I'm dubious about reboots. It can work. It doesn't have to. But I was curious, and I was like, all right, I'm going to check this out. And, you know, just being able to say hi to Norman Lear, that's, you know, he outlasted us all at the bar that night.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
That ended up being a legendary ATX story,
which was
kind of amazing. I was across town and with Bo Willimon from...
you were having your own legendary ATX story.
I was having a little legendary session that night as well. And it was hilarious that Bo Willimon got a text that said, hey, Norman Lear's having drinks out on the Intercontinental. I was like... This is fun. That's fun. You know, people, you know, and all the writers who I was with at Casual and on, they're like, oh, well, maybe we should go over there. it's pretty great. We should mention that if we do go international today, you can watch or not watch on World City. And of course, you can get all 13 episodes right now on One Day at a Time. Two things. Tomorrow on Saturday, I believe that'll be tomorrow in everybody's part of the world. I know those people who are still thinking about Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds. There's the Bright Lights, the documentary that they're in, is being shown on HBO tomorrow, I think at about 8 p.m. So check in on that if you want to. And then I would say a good transition for us is Sunday, David, is the 74th, and I'm sure 74 of those were pretty kind of hokey, or 73 previous ones, and this one certainly will be.
It's Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, it's Jimmy Fallon hosting the Golden Globe Award, so it should probably be hokey. And, you know, it's, I mean, look, it's the Golden Globes. That's what you always have to say. There's no way you can pick these things. Last year, Lady Gaga, for God's sake, won one of these things in television. But I'll be live tweeting along with a bunch of other people from The Hollywood Reporter. So if you want to watch in real time, you can follow me on Twitter, and I'm no doubt be snarking it up. And as somebody recently reminded me, since I haven't said it very often, yes, I will have the cranky pants on. I have not abandoned that terminology. I will wear those. They will be snug. They will be painful and itchy, and I will be wearing them. But so I should probably go through quickly, should I, David, about my picks for the Globes that I was forced to make?
Well, since you were forced to make them, by all means.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, what you should do, like, okay, we do this every year. Scott Feinberg, who's our awards expert, picks who will win, and I pick the who should win, which is what a critic should do, right? I don't have to find the methodology between who put the best episode in or who campaigned the best behind the scenes. I'm just like, which show? And as I said to my editors, I'm like, well, can I, in every category, mention the ones that were not left, that were left out, that should have been in, but... that would have been exhausting. So I would just quickly say, because there's so many of them, right? I mean, they did an okay job. There's a couple of categories where you're like, oh, like the, for example, Best Drama doesn't have The Americans in it, which is
that's
it
crazy.
Should. So I picked Game of Thrones. He's going to pick The Crown. When we get to Best Comedy, we both agree that Atlanta on FX should win. I think that's a given. We also both agree in the best miniseries or movie category that The People versus O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story should win. That to me is kind of a slam dunk. But again, the asterisk being that it is the Globes.
The Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
Yes.
And which is why I think he's right about The Crown, because that's mm-hmm. a more international interest.
Yeah, and his picks, as you'll see, I'm just doing the TV versions, but his picks you'll see that bent. He's definitely going along like what will win based on, you know, if it's the thing. So when we got to Best Actor, I picked, of course, Matthew Reese from The Americans, and he picked Billy Bob Thornton from Goliath. And Billy Bob Thornton is a big fan. They love him over at the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. So
fair enough.
Fair enough. You can see him in Goliath. Drama, I went with, this is where this makes me laugh. I went with Evan Rachel Wood, who I think is this, it's a pretty strong category of people who, were nominated. Kerry Russell is the one who's really overly due. I only thought there was one, I thought she was fine in the show. Although it was kind of a one note performance, it was good to see her. But in this group of people that were selected in the category, I thought she was the weakest. And of course, Scott has picked her to win, and that's Winona Ryder in Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah.
And I looked at that and I thought that would be a very Globes pick, wouldn't it?
Yep. Movie star doing TV.
Movie star doing TV and being basically crying and screaming the whole time.
Yeah.
Kind of a one note thing. I mean, it was, what do you pick what you got to pick? In the best actor. Well,
there are Christmas lights. So
there were Christmas lights she could talk to. It made her a little bit nutty. In the best comedy category, we both took Donald Glover. I made the statement in my piece saying, or my little snippet that said, if you're not going to give it to Jeffrey Tambor, the only way you can sort of get away with that is just give it to Donald Glover, and then everybody go, oh yeah, well that works too. So hoping that happens. And best actress in comedy, I also think this is kind of a kind of funny diversion. Gina Rodriguez is nominated, and I love her. And as I noted, which could be a future column for me, I think, Gina Rodriguez is such a young actress and she's only been, where were we, the third season of Jane the Virgin, and we're taking her for granted. So it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's really great. It's like, oh yeah, Gina Rodriguez. Oh yeah. Let's move on. Let's give it to Rachel Bloom or somebody. we're kind of taking Gina Rodriguez for granted. She's pretty amazing. So I said, let's give her the hardware. And he picks, I have not talked to Scott directly about this. He picks Sarah Jessica Parker in Divorce.
Really?
Yes.
Well, again, I can see that just on a, statistics and, having watched the show. No. And it's not even her. It's just the show.
It's the show. But, and I've said this to other people. Isn't it like Sarah Jessica Parker is in a different show?
Yes.
She's in a very serious drama. Everybody else is in a comedy. So it's very, she's in an emotional, and she has some comedic moments, but she's in sort of a drama.
And it's not an uninteresting show. It's just totally separate.
Yeah. I mean, Thomas Hayden Church is he's in a comedy.
Yeah.
And Sarah Jessica Parker's in a drama.
So maybe that's why they got divorced. I don't know.
Maybe they did. That's not a show for me, even though I reviewed it and didn't like it. Best supporting actor, I went with Sterling K. Brown, who has to win it. The whole thing's a sham. But as we've noted, it is the Globes. And Scott went with John Lithgow from The Crown, which is – Lithgow is definitely a Hollywood Foreign Press favorite. So that could happen. Yeah. We both picked the best supporting actress category is let's just say it's flawed. They overlook a lot of people. So, but they do have Thandi Newton in there, and she is magnificent. And we both picked her to win for her Westworld performance, which if you have not – people who haven't watched Westworld, what's good about her performance is that it starts off very slow, and then she becomes a central part of the story going forward. And then the next category, the final two categories for Globes on Sunday are Best Actor – miniseries or movie. And when you get into this miniseries or movie part, I always joke that the Globes just kind of gave up. They were tired, perhaps. There's not that many of them, so maybe they just couldn't delegate authority, but they don't put supporting actors in there separately, so you move the supporting in with the lead, and so you've got a lot of really good actors like Riz Ahmed and John Turturro going against each other when one should be the lead and one should be the support. But I picked both John Turturro and Courtney B. Vance, saying that I would take either one of them, and that the category was so screwed up that I don't care who wins as long as one of those two. I think that there was a little fudging on Scott's part too, where he basically said, oh, they all could win. But he says that he's heard that there's big Globe's support for Tom Hiddleston, which I say, well, that's a very Globe's thing to do since Hugh Laurie is really the star of that show. But whatever. It is what it is. And then we both picked the slam dunk that is Sarah Paulson in the People versus O.J. Simpson American Crime Story. If she doesn't win, they just didn't watch, apparently. So there's that. I think I got through that with some speed, but that's Sunday.
Yeah, I will do my best to snark along, which I sometimes watch the award shows and do that. I remember one year doing the Oscars with everyone from the AV Club when everyone from the AV Club was different.
Right.
Uh-huh. That was fun. But yeah, I don't always watch the Golden Globes, especially if Ricky Gervais is hosting. I like him in small doses. Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, that was delightful. And Jimmy Fallon will be nice and inoffensive, and he'll be goofy.
Yeah, I think my take on that is I tend to watch the Globes only because it's just so dumb that it's just you can't make half the stuff up that actually happens. Lady Gaga last year being an example, and also I do like how they have the movie stars mingling with the TV stars and how over the years that became kind of less of a distinguished class structure. And then lastly, that it is in fact in the ballroom that we sit in during the summer press tour. So it gives me sort of PTSD, and makes me laugh at the same time. Like, DiCaprio and I, we're sitting in the same seat. Yeah. So that's my allure of that show.
And I'm always amused by the weird throwaway moments or jokes or like Amy Poehler going and sitting on people's laps for when they're shown as being a nominee and things like that. You don't get to see that at a lot of awards shows. This one's looser and more fun.
Yeah, and I until I became really annoyed when the Globes was that's for some people saying that it was picking who was going to be. Well, for starters, Oscar winners, which is a different category than I care about since I never get to see movies. But once it became more influential 2 years ago when it was becoming more important to television than the Emmys, which it now has ceased to do, I was getting really annoyed by that. And So it was harder for me to enjoy it, but I do love those moments that you just spoke about with Amy Poehler and various actors and actresses goofing around because they don't take it seriously like they do the Oscars and to some extent the Emmys. And there allows them to loosen up. And of course, you know, historically the Globes have had the greatest idea ever, which was very old school Hollywood, which was let's put top notch champagne, real champagne, on the tables and let people drink hours before the show and through the show. That's how you make a really good televised show. It's never been a mystery to me how that show is so much fun to watch. And I do like that when they, and I think people have said this before too, on Twitter and whatnot, but just anecdotally, people seem to love the, like you say, like when they're cutting away to a commercial and they're like, when we come back, and then and they have this long list of things that they're going to do. But in the meantime, they show everybody sort of chatting in the walkways and then back by the bathroom. And, you know, everybody's kind of mixing and having a good time. And, you know, that we're a celebrity driven culture in some ways. And people like to see that, like, oh, look, it's John Hamm. And he's hanging out with, whoever, some
Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Right. And so it's kind of an interesting mix. So I'll watch for that. I won't be doing a review of it or any kind of recap. I put the kibosh on that and said that I'll just contribute my snarky comments. So I'll do that.
Yeah. I have to admit, I don't get the point of reviewing awards shows, but I'm not an entertainment magazine editor. So.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of a tough one. And I always said, how am I going to review with all the parts about the movies, like when they say you gotta review the Oscars, I'm like, okay, this would be interesting because I've never seen these movies, so I can't really tell you, oh, what a ripoff, you know. And it's like, okay, I'll just review the host, and it doesn't, you know, it's a short-lived recipe for writing a column.
Boy, that surprise winner their clip was great. I don't see why everyone's upset about that win. And then everyone starts emailing you for weeks.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to.
Well, speaking of Jimmy Fallon, that might be a good segue. We're doing this really smoothly this week.
Mm-hmm.
A good segue into talking about Conan O'Brien and the news that's sort of bubbling up at the end of this week that they may change how they're doing the show, that it may go to once a week, it may go to a different format, it may go to just being digital, and they're still trying to figure it out, but they're going to stay in business with Conan no matter what.
Yeah, and I think that it was really interestingly framed. I at least see the show staying out in its current configuration as a nightly thing. You know, it was tough for him switching to TBS. Obviously, he got screwed by NBC. Everybody was totally behind him when he went to TBS, and it was Team Conan, and it was the glory days of, you know, Conan, sort of people feeling he got shafted, and he's really underrated and undervalued in a lot of his stuff that he's done. And I was Team Conan, you know, during that whole thing, and watched his early TBS shows. But in some ways, back then, it might as well have been on PBS, because at some point you just forgot that he was there. I hate to say it, but I literally forgot about him, and I had to really go like remember. And I don't like setting. I mean, I do it now to a certain extent, but at some point, I think I had every late night talk show and political show recording. And the episodes were just piling up on the DVR, and it was more of an annoyance than anything else. Right. And so I didn't really want to do all that and I cut them all down. And I'd forgot about Conan. I'd have to go find him, but he really does do excellent work. I think that out of sight, out of mind part about being on TBS has hurt him. I think it helps that Samantha Bee and everybody else is all these new comedies that are doing so well for them. I think that that's really helping. So I think it would be a mistake to pull the plug on him right now.
Yes,
they're not giving up on him, which I think is the key. Kevin Riley's, they're not giving up on him. They love him. And he would do it in some other form. I do think that they're on to something. And I, you know, I have no insider knowledge whether Conan is on board for this, but I do think they're on to something, David, when they're talking about the format and the way that it's done, maybe even how it's delivered, needs to be looked at really closely to see what's best.
Yeah.
And we'll see what they come up with. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's when he shifted over to TBS, you know, I was very excited that, oh, yeah, he's going to get his own show again. And, you know, I enjoyed his Tonight Show run and was curious to see how they were going to tweak things. But I cut the cable cord years and years ago, so mm-hmm. I didn't have TBS.
Right.
So we'll just say that I found another way of watching the show, and we'll leave it at that. And, you know, and so I watched the first couple of weeks and it was fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he's still Conan. It's still funny. But, you know, what was it that made me watch this instead of Letterman or Colbert or whomever, you know? And even now, my nightly thing is Colbert and then Seth Meyers, because I'm. You know, it's kind of funny how NBC and CBS each have sort of like the goofy entertainer and then the intellectual political satire guy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they've managed to schedule it so that you could program just – you could just watch the goofy guy or you could just watch the satire guy. And so I do that. But even there – and I mean part of it is they're both of them are in New York. But I will notice the same guests within one or two nights of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Pimping the same thing, talking the same basic stories, and occasionally the if they get them to do a comedy bit, the comedy bit will wind up being very samey, which is really odd. I remember Bryan Cranston was on Colbert and Seth Meyers within days of each other, and in both of them, he was pretending to be an actor acting poorly. And you know, the sketches themselves were totally different, but the kernel of them was the same, and it was really odd.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so, you know, with something like Conan, I'm like, yeah, I mean, I love Conan, but I have to make an effort. It's, you know, it's easier now with the TBS app and I've got the Apple TV and it's fine, but it's still, I have to make an effort to go to it. And when I go to it, it's usually because I'm trying to see somebody who's on that night who isn't on everything all the time.
Yeah.
Like a stand-up comic that is making his network debut, right? But, you know, it's not enough. It's like, I don't know. It's not a nightly habit. And even Colbert and Seth Meyers are kind of falling away from me. I'll watch the bits. I generally have Colbert on. I generally fall asleep after that. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's very rare that I watch these things live anymore. I think it would benefit from changing the format a little bit or just trying to do his own thing instead of trying to do Johnny Carson.
Yeah. And it's all of these things, the best of the best blur into things you can find virally online or on their own sites.
Right.
And that was a necessity for them to survive, but it also is in many ways their downfall in that, like, oh, people just started realizing, oh, I can get all the good bits sent to me, or they'll pop up on Twitter, and I don't have to sit through the guest interviews unless, like you said, you want to see that guest. And mostly they're pitching something, and they're on within a couple of days, as you noted, and it's as a concept, it's less relevant. I've kind of like lost interest in it in late night. I mean, I stay tuned, but I've kind of like lost interest in it.
Yeah, I mean, my son got hooked on the Colbert Report for about 5 years till the end, and the way he would watch would be the next day online, and we'd watch the first two segments and skip the last one. Once in a while, he would watch the guest segment again. You know, it's an astronaut, or it's, you know, someone that I've seen on Dad's bookshelf. And I'll watch. And that's kind of how he watches the late night shows now, is he'll watch the bits, or he'll find them actually broken into just the viral video snippets. And I'm just wondering, you know, and especially watching Colbert, whom I love, and I want the show to be so much better. I wonder if they would do better with fewer guests and more time. Let him do what he does well with a guest instead of trying to do the, you know, the 3-minute pitch the movie.
Right. Yeah. And I personally, for me, I think I've moved on to more of the political leaning news shows anyway, as we've gone forward. Well, moving along in the week, which we probably should, where Tuesday. One we should probably talk about, because I think it's got issues we need to talk about because it's a little slow moving, and that's Taboo on FX with Tom Hardy. And I can't remember, David, were you a Peaky Blinders fan, or did you ever get to that series?
I did like Peaky Blinders.
Mm-hmm.
I found it fascinating. I'm watching shows that show me a world or a subculture that I'm totally unaware of.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And that's what I loved about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you might be interested in this then. And in a way that maybe others will not be not in a critical way, but I mean, right. they might be, because it is kind of a tough start and a tough sell. And in my review, I noted, so here's the deal. It's Stephen Knight, who created Peaky Blinders, and Tom Hardy, who was in Peaky Blinders, are back. And this is a pretty star-studded period piece drama that Hardy and Knight and Hardy's father, he didn't help come up with this idea. And it's set in 1814 London. So it's definitely a period piece. It's a costume drama. And I know that FX really wanted that. They didn't make it work with Bastard Executioner. They've had a couple of stabs at it in the past. They've had success with like The Strain and things like that, where they've gone into different genres, and which you should. You need to be broad. And right. I make the point that I've made many times that FX is really the best curated cable channel out there. The one place they are lacking is getting something in the in this historical drama genre. And so they come back with Taboo, and they showed us the first three episodes. So they gave us access to the first three episodes, David. And it's really kind of interesting because, I do note right up front in my review that if you're not a Tom Hardy fan, this is not for you. The camera like literally does not leave his face or his body for the entire time of it. And I like what they're doing. And I think it's important. Somebody said, "Oh, well, why did you think it was slow? And can't shows be slow?" And I'm like, dude, I was a huge fan of, you know, the slow TV movement and Rectify and, you know, and all these other shows that were at the time, like, hugely influential in the art of actually showing a door closed for 25 seconds. You know, it's like, these are slow, and Rectify is slow. So I don't mind slow, but it to me, as a critic, it's now a point of criticism in that in the world we live in, if you start off slow, well, you better have like people better have total devotion to either your star, the concept or genre, or your channel. And they might with FX and Hardy. But if you don't come out of the gates pretty fast, you're not going to hold anybody's attention in this new environment we're in. So, you know, I do note in my review that the first 3 hours, which we watched, are interesting, but they are slow. And most historical fiction pieces are slow. You're trying to tell an enormous piece of story that has so much backstory, and you have to, you know, and at the same time, we're doing the things that you said you liked, Dave, where you're moving you into a world you don't really know. 1814 London is with its muddy streets and horses and whatever. We've seen it in some ways, but this is pretty bleak. And you know, while I liked how it moved, and it has a really great cast, including Jonathan Pryce, who's the head of the East Indian trading company. And, you know, that's the other thing. It's like the Brits know that East India was, you know, they were a conglomerate before there were conglomerates. They were as powerful as a nation, and helped define British territories, and then clearly overstepped that boundary. But Americans don't know that much for the most part. And so it's basically this wayward son, Tom Hardy, who's been missing for 10 years and thought dead. And there's all these stories about how crazy he is and deranged. And, you know, he's been in Africa. And did he die? Is he a ghost? You know, and he comes back to claim his father's fortune, which is nothing, except he owns this pivotal piece of land in the West that the East India wants. And so they're butting heads. All of it unfolds interestingly, and it's very well written, and it's dramatic. It's just not fast. It's not compelling. It's compelling in a very slow way. So I'm just saying, I always try to make this note that yes, being slow is an issue, and it's a slow build. So through the first three, I would watch it. I want to see all, and there's eight, I believe. I want to see all eight. The part that was hard for me to put into the review, David, is because there is the, you may not laugh. I can hear a laugh coming, but you may not laugh. There is a supernatural element that is hinted at.
Okay.
Which they don't give us enough to say, oh, you're really going to do a great job with that, or why are you doing that? It's not there. Let's just say that he can see dead people, and he also has flashbacks. There's a possibility that he may not actually be alive. There's a possibility that he might not be human, that he could be part animal. All of these things are hinted at. I don't think any of them are really true. I think he's just a guy. Right. But the fact that in 3 hours, I don't know the answer to those things is a little bit of a problem. And he does have flashbacks to his dead mother, who was from a tribe. And so she's kind of in this makeup Indian garb and looks very scary and splashes about the water quite a bit. And then it leaves him, and he does talk to dead people. And then you're like, okay, I'm going to really need to see more to see if that works or not. And you just don't in the first 3 hours. So it's really hard to say, yeah, this story that starts really slow, is going to be great, especially when it gets up to the point when we find out why he's having these visions. So I don't know. I think that's a little behind the curtain of what it's like to be a critic and then think, how much do I tell people? And especially if there's a red flag behind that curtain.
Right.
Yeah.
When, and Thomas Hayden Church is in a comedy the whole time. So, right. I've seen previews for it, but I have not gone out of my way to do research on it to say what is it about or anything. Mm-hmm. But it looked interesting.
Yeah. And he's really great.
You know, I thought I recognized Jonathan Pryce. So good for him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'll check it out. And, okay. Knowing that it's 8 episodes, mm-hmm. then maybe going slow for 3 is not a bad thing. But at the same time, you know, if the supernatural element isn't a serious mystery, then there's no reason to drag that out.
Yeah.
You know, go ahead and give a little bit more because you only have 8 episodes. But if it is an important thing, then by all means, take your time and make that the climax of the 8 episodes. I don't know.
Exactly. All I will say to wrap that part up, because we need to move on to the next show, but is that I did have that part when he started talking to a dead person. I was like, oh, dear. what?
Oh.
Are we really going to go there? Because I was okay with the flashbacks, because that could be a fugue state.
Right.
He's tired. He's been beaten up. He's tired. He could have flashbacks where he could be dreaming. But when you were literally talking to somebody who is dead in a morgue, I was like, oh, man, you're not giving me a lot of room here. Oh. Not giving me a lot of chance.
Well, I will give it a try, and maybe we'll revisit this in 2 months when they're all done.
Yeah, it could be a thing. And all right, well, I think this takes us into territory for next Friday when Jason will be back. But I want to hit 2 things just real quickly, because a lot of people have already been talking about Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events on Netflix.
Right.
I believe it drops on the 13th next Friday.
Yes.
I haven't seen it. The advance reviews have been very good. I think it's an 82 on Metacritic, which is good. Yeah. So it's advanced reviews are good in that way. Dan and I had to pass on reviewing it, so we have someone else reviewing it. And but yeah, it seems like it's going to do well, and we can touch on it. The one series that I did manage to see is, and I'll only talk about it briefly, is Sneaky Pete. Have you heard about Sneaky Pete before?
I have heard of it, because it was in development for CBS for a while, and then mm-hmm. moved to Amazon, and it's what Bryan Cranston is behind it.
Yeah, and I think you can still go on and see it, the pilot online. It is kind of a weird heritage, exactly, in that it was a CBS pilot that got passed on, which you would think, okay, whatever. But then it became a bidding war between, the higher end cable channels and the streamers, because I think they really thought there was something there,
right?
That could go on. It was developed by David Shore, from House fame, and Bryan Cranston. But Shore left the show when it was in its turnaround phases. Graham Yost from Justified and The Americans, who's amazing, came in, and he's the executive producer and the day-to-day showrunner. And then, you know, lo and behold, once Amazon said, well, we win the bidding war and we're taking it, Bryan Cranston decided, well, I think I may stick around a little bit longer, and maybe we can, as we build episodes 2 through 10, maybe my character will have a better role, and that's all to the better. So nice. I won't go into it too much. It's a great, you're gonna love this cast. It's a great cast.
It's Giovanni Ribisi.
Yes, and he's really good in it. He's so good in it. And Bryan Cranston is amazing, of course. But you've got Margot Martindale in this thing.
Oh,
you know, and she's and Maren Ireland, who is I think people really like her. Peter Garrity's in this. There's a couple of unknown actors who do really good work. But Margot Martindale is, you know,
she's a national treasure.
She's a national treasure. You know, obviously she's worked with Graham Yost before on Justified and The Americans. So she's amazing casting. And I won't give too much away. It's basically Giovanni Ribisi plays a con man in prison. He takes on the identity of his cellmate, who's named Pete. So Giovanni Ribisi becomes Pete. That's not who he is. and I love it because of the concept is he thinks I'm getting out of prison like in the next couple of days. I've had this cellmate who won't shut up about his history, and I now I've learned it basically because the guy wouldn't shut up. Now I'm going to go into upstate New York, and I'm gonna do a con on his grandparents, who were apparently rich. And you know, it's a very late in the game, very foolish idea that he comes upon late, which, and all late ideas are bad ideas, of course. And I love the fact that that's the premise of this series, and you find out pretty quickly that people's memories are faulty, and Giovanni Ribisi is in way over his head, and Margot Martindale is almost like she was when she was in Justified, where she can see right through you. She can see a con coming, and so like when he comes to the house to pull off that he's Pete, everybody's like, "Hey Pete, we haven't seen you in 20 years." Ha! Not Margot Martindale, man. So. It's great. I mean, that alone, right? I mean, just that description would kind of make you want to watch it. So I would just say, without going too much into it, because maybe, you know, it's coming out next Friday, we'll go into it longer. And the review's not posted yet. I loved it. So people should put Sneaky Pete on their radar.
I'm sold already.
Good.
Because I mean, I love a good con game, and I love a good con game that goes horribly, horribly wrong. Those are the most fun.
And those, and when you're trying to con Bryan Cranston as a mobster, it's pretty good. It's fun.
So with all the new TV coming out, is there anything that is a surefire not a thing that you want to assign for me at some point? Something that even Dan won't touch. I don't know.
Well, it's funny. I'm trying to review. It's one of my. I started this towards the end of 2016, but of course that's list time, and we're watching catch up and finding new shows. And, you know, all of January is just chock-a-block of new shows. But my goal in 2017 is to do fewer reviews and then do bigger takeout pieces on things that, like, you know, either I couldn't get to see, or it's going to be shows like, say, The Young Pope or somebody that, or Victoria or whatever, that people are actually going to be talking about, maybe.
Right.
And then delve into that. I don't actually necessarily need to review the 78th season of Homeland, for example, or, you know, I don't need to do, you know, whatever the next big thing is. Or
24 Legacy.
Yes. I don't need to do that. It's exactly what I'm saying. You know, I want to do something that's not something for CBS. So I'm going to try to do less of that. So yes, I'm sure, to answer your question, I'm sure we're going to come up with a number of not a thing, or like, oh, be very afraid of this network show that we might have to put in your grips, in your capable hands, since you came out of the bullpen to fill in for this episode. We need to reward you. And although giving you bad shows is not necessarily rewarding you, I understand that.
Oh, but it's rewarding the listeners. I mean, we still say Isolate Torso all the time from CSI Cyber. So not a thing is not a bad thing. I think we're kind of winding up here. We don't have any letters from listeners this week. So listeners, please say hi on Twitter at TVTM, or visit us on Facebook, or visit TVTalkMachine.com and send us an email. We will gladly answer the dumbest questions. We'll answer smart ones too.
But, well, we might. We'll try.
We'll try. Maybe. We'll try. But yeah, we'll take requests. I think we've got this week's TV viewing mapped out. High points are Sneaky Pete next week. And
yeah, mm-hmm.
If you're in the four camera mood, One Day at a Time.
Sure.
If you're in the reboot, reimagining mood, Emerald City. If you just can't get enough Oz.
And certainly if you want to take a chance on a slow burner, there's Taboo.
And there's Taboo. And I'll give that a shot.
I think you should. I'll be interesting to see if it gets where it wants to go. It was a very tough show to review. I'm not expecting I think the reviews are decent, not great.
Yeah.
I think they're at about 65% on Metacritic right now. That'll probably go up maybe. But I think that's a show that will turn towards the more positive as we see more episodes. But then who knows? I mean, you talk to dead people, David, and then you run into some trouble.
Yeah, that's always good advice. So yeah, and then Sunday night, the Golden Globes, we will be live snarking
mm-hmm.
in our various Twitter places.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, tune in for that.
So I guess I shall say I will see you online, and it has, as always, been a pleasure talking with you.
It's always a pleasure to have you fill in, and thank you for deftly handling this. And I guess we should give a shout out to vacationing Jason, and we'll see him when he gets back. And part of the reason we didn't have any letters is because we had one in the tank last week, and we just there are probably some sitting around somewhere in Jason's fictional
inbox.
Yeah, his fictional inbox somewhere. And but yeah, we recorded two episodes. So one was in the can last week as we were ringing in the holidays or New Year, out the holidays and in the New Year. So we'll look for more letters next week. But yes, thank you, David. Thank you for coming out of the bullpen.
Anytime. Hey, you know, he gets to go to Hawaii. I get to talk to you. That's even, you know.
No, it's not. You're very nice, but no.
It's better for my bank account. We'll put it that way.
Very good.
So, yes, join us next week for another TV Talk Machine, and thank you for listening.